The following program is brought to you by Podcast One. Recorded live backstage, this is Geffen Playhouse Unscripted. Now here's your host, Gil Cates Jr.
Gil Cates Jr., filling in for the awesome Daniel Beatty. Welcome to Geffen Playhouse Unscripted. Today's guest is Harry Haddon Payton, who recently made his highly anticipated Broadway debut in Lerner and Lowe's My Fair Lady, which garnered him both Tony and Drama Desk Award nominations for lead actor in a musical. Congratulations, Harry.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
I should point out the performances as Henry Higgins, for those that didn't know. Harry is also known to many from his work on Downton Abbey and The Crown, as well as films including The Little Stranger, About Time, The Deep Blue Sea, and La Vie en Rose. And Harry's UK theater credits include – I'll stop talking about you soon. I'm just kind of teeing it up. Harry's UK theater credits include The West End, The Importance of Being Earnest, Flare Path, and The Pride – among many West End, She Stoops to Conquer at the Royal National, Posh at the Royal Court. I'm sure I missed a bunch of others, but just to – he's really good, and he's performed a lot. And welcome welcome to the program, Harry.
You got the big ones. Thank you. Thank you, Gil. Nice to speak to you.
You as well. So I'd love to talk to you, I guess, right off the bat about you taking on the iconic role of Henry Higgins.
Yeah.
My Fair Lady is, of course, a great American musical class. It's American, right? It's American.
Yeah,
Lerner and Lowe. Great musical, great American musical. But obviously, it's also, I'm sure, complicated to take on in this day and age. And I know that Bart sure had a very strong point of view in conceiving the show, and would just love to hear you both talk about the role and talking about playing the role in the context of today.
Well, I think the starting point for Bart was to cast me as slightly younger than it had been done before. So that Eliza and I and Henry as equals, really. And that's what's interesting about it. We arrive on a level pegging and we end in the same fashion. And actually, it's not far, because it's an American musical, but based on George Bernard Shaw's play, Pygmalion.
Right, of course.
And we've kind of blended bits from the play, bits from the musical, and from the Pygmalion 1938 film, which Bernard Shaw wrote as well and actually got the Oscar for. So we've kind of used bits from cherry-picked, if you like, from all the versions to get the sense of what Bernard Shaw really wanted. And we're not straying far from what he had intended. In fact, I feel like we're just delivering what he wanted. And in the original, Higgins is described as 40 something, and that's, you know, I'm nearly there.
Right.
I've got a few years, but I'm getting there. And I think that's really interesting that Lauren, who plays Eliza, and I are the same age and meet as equals. Hmm. And what's also interesting, what hasn't happened before is, I don't think, is that we really focus on the fact that she chooses to better herself. Eliza is this flower girl wanting to improve her accent and her, you know, etiquette so that she can go up a class, if you like. Previously, it's been seen that that Higgins is a sort of puppeteer. The onus has been on him changing a girl as an experiment for a bit of fun. But what's in the writing and what we're definitely trying to highlight is the fact that she is choosing to seek him out and better her own circumstances. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the big difference. And then we've chosen to do something slightly different at the end, which I don't want to spoil, but, It means that they're able to leave on equal terms as well.
Got it.
Which I think is important for today. Yeah.
Wow. Great. So you covered some of this in what you just said right there, but what for you are some of the highlights of this new production? And again, some of that you spoke to, but
I won't repeat myself. The Lincoln Center theatre is got to be the greatest theatre I've certainly ever seen, let alone worked in. It's an incredible building with Andre Bishop's the artistic director. And the whole atmosphere of the place, for starters, is one of creativity and collaboration and generosity. It's amazing. But the scale of it is immense. Mm. And not just in the auditorium. Backstage is even bigger. It's like a football pitch back there. So
wow.
What we get in this production is a set that come out of the deep, if you like, appear from darkness. And it's just awesome. And you can hear the audience, the communal intake of breath as my study, for instance, makes its way downstage into the thrust of the theater. So I think we're doing it on a scale that is unseen and unparalleled. And we have an orchestra of 30, which again, you don't get every day on Broadway, and an ensemble of about 30. So in terms of value for money, I think we're delivering.
I can tell you one thing that's not happening at the Geffen Playhouse right now. An orchestra of 30 with a cast of 30.
Yeah.
I
am very aware. I am.
That's amazing.
This is, it's an extraordinary position to be in. And they're really looking after us at the theater. And you know, they had to fight for the rights to put My Fair Lady on. I think there were other bigger, more renowned producers with more capital who were wanting it. But I'm really grateful it went to the Lincoln Center, and they're giving it every chance to make it as sort of memorable and iconic as the original. So we all feel pretty blessed to be there.
Can't wait to see it. So this is obviously a very different role and medium than your work on The Crown, for example.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you approach the work differently depending on the medium, or is the character building a similar process for you?
That's a good question. I think ultimately the getting in the character's head and working out their changes of thought is a very similar experience. But obviously what's different is being on stage, and the technical aspect of doing a musical like this is considerably harder,
right,
than whispering into a microphone, which is sometimes what TV feels like. So on this, we're dancing. There's an awful lot of movement and gags, which require technical, I think, experience and know-how and projection. It's a grueling process, but ultimately it's worth it, and you get the live response from the audience, which makes it amazing.
Right.
Yeah. But I think like, ultimately, it's just turning up the volume, sort of thing, you know, on a performance. It's in the head and in the heart. It's the same thing. But you just have to project to 1,000 people.
Totally. I went to Syracuse. I was a drama major, and I remember Bobby Lewis spoke and said the difference between stage acting and film acting. There was quiet. You'll wake the baby. For, you know, film, and quiet, you'll wake the baby.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not afraid. You know, certain things just stick with you. That was one of them.
That's it. And it's my first musical. So I have played stages this big. The Olivier at the National Theatre is as big as, the Vivian Beaumont Theatre, I would say. And I did that without microphone. So I'm used to this
Wow.
scale, but not when you've got to speak over an orchestra. So we do have obviously mics and stuff in this. But I guess I have to learn to let the mic do a bit more work, but it's all part of a learning process. And again, it's the technical side of acting that I don't think gets talked about enough, because the sort of the glitz and glamour is behind going all method and getting inside a character. But when people are paying a lot of money for a ticket and they're right at the back, they need to hear every word, and that's I think is important when you're on a stage as big as this.
Absolutely. I was reading, just thinking as you were talking, I was just reading or watching something last night when I was doing some preliminary additional research. Well, that doesn't make sense. How can it be preliminary and additional, Will? Will, that doesn't make sense. Will, my sidekick when I say stupid things. Will, that's not possible.
All things are possible.
Oh, thanks, Will.
Yeah.
when I was doing additional research and whatnot, and you had mentioned in an interview, I think, about, just like you said, this is your first musical, and when you first heard about this opportunity, that you were like, why am I even going? Like, this is ridiculous. Like, Henry Higgins brought, like what? Yeah. I'm curious, because so much about this podcast, the Geffen Playhouse podcast, in addition to talking about the work and what's current, is also the process and really the struggles or the, you know, doubts. And I think it would be interesting just to hear
hours of struggles and doubts.
Me too. Let's have our own show, the Harry and Gil Show. Struggles and Doubts with Harry and Gil.
I think that is because, you know, 15 years of this job so far of and it's hard, and there are it's tricky because you need to give off the persona that you're never out of work. And that's at least how I experience other people's dealing with these
right.
things.
Like dating, and you're not desperate.
Yeah, right, exactly. And I think we need to be responsible. And for people who are in a similar position to me or you know, building their career and working hard, I think that's irresponsible. The truth is, a lot of us spend most of our time out of work and facing disappointment. And so there is some truth. Yeah, when the part came along, it wasn't on my radar because all the interpretations of it before I had in my head were Rex Harrison, Jonathan Pryce, Tim Piggott Smith, all a lot older than me. And there've been a couple of versions back in the UK. I think Dominic West did it up in Sheffield, and a wonderful actor and friend who is sadly just died, called Alex Beckett, did a version in England as well, and they were younger, I guess, so it was sort of, I guess it was in my subconscious maybe, but when it came along, all I had in my head was Jonathan Pryce and
right.
and I just thought, well, did they know, what have they seen me in that they think this is right for me? Was I playing an old man?
Right. How do you overcome that and go in with the confidence and the gusto, or whatever you want to call it, that obviously it took for you to get the role?
Well, it was a case of my agent made me do it. So I believe in hard work. And that stood me pretty good stead. There are jobs I've got in the past that on paper I shouldn't have got, because there would be probably more famous people lined up to do it. But I always believe if you work harder than anyone else, then it might, you have a good chance. So I worked hard. I went in with the attitude that I probably won't get this, but I'm going to try and enjoy it. And that's, I think, the best attitude to have. And so in the first audition with Bart, I went in prepared and I was ready to just do both scenes and both songs and give it my all and leave and never think about it again. But within the first line of a scene, he had stopped me, and suddenly, actually, I was thrown off course because this audition felt more like a rehearsal. And that immediately got me excited that this was someone willing to collaborate and take on my ideas as well, and push me and try different things. So that was cool. And at the end of that first audition, he sat me down and he said, right, everyone leave the room, because there were quite a few people and there was a camera. He said, turn the camera off. I went, oh, what's going on? And he said, Harry, this is kind of a big deal, because it hasn't been done on Broadway for 25 years. there are an awful lot of people who need to make sure this is going to work. And so we're going to fly you over to New York to audition again. And again, at which point in my head, I'm just, okay, all right. All I'm hearing is free weekend in New York.
Right.
Where I've got 20 minutes of stressful doing an audition. But in the wait, obviously, I got a bit more excited about it and ended up not sleeping, and then just threw everything into the audition. And Lauren Ambrose was in the audition with me. She was already cast. So it was a chance for them to see us opposite each other. And obviously something went right. And 20 minutes later, I got the call.
Awesome.
So it's a lesson in staying open, doing, even though you feel like you don't have a chance, working harder than anyone else will, and seeing which way this crazy journey, this crazy job takes you on. Because you know where you want to get, but there are many, many detours, and you just have to be open to them, I think.
Agreed. Speaking of detours, this is not that much of a detour, but I wanted to kind of pretend I had a clever segue.
It's a good thing, yeah.
So I just have to ask, because I know of your work in Downton Abbey, and we worked with Alan Leach last year. He was on the Geffen stage. He did Constellations with Jennifer Goodwin.
Yes, he did. Yeah.
And great guy and a great actor, and just curious, we're such a fan of his at the theater. It was such a pleasure to have around. Just if you had any fun thoughts about working with Alan.
He was a lot of fun to have around on the Downton Abbey set as well. He there are scenes, especially when you're not in the front of a scene and you're near Alan, you're in danger because he's whispering things at you.
I bet. And that's so funny.
I wasn't quite ready for it. I was a new boy. And he had me just crying with laughter. If there are ever scenes with me with my back to the camera, that's Alan's fault.
Got it.
He was amazing. But actually, everyone on that set was very welcoming and lovely. But there's no doubt Alan is kind of – he set the tone, I think, for the whole production. And as you say, a joy to be around.
So I just had to ask once I made that that realization last night. So what, just going back, way back, in terms of process, what was your first acting experience and what sparked your interest in pursuing a career in acting?
I kind of came to it through, I was a choir boy really at school. I sang in choirs and I was quite good. So I was given solos. And I think that was the first experience of being told I was good at performing, if you see what I mean.
Yep.
And made me want to do more. And then I was, from there, I was given lead roles in school productions of I did something called Les Bavards by Jacques Offenbach, a sort of a light opera. And I had a lead in that, and then and bits in Pirates of Penzance and things like this. And then as I progressed through school, I kind of did bits and bobs. It wasn't my identity because I was a bit of an all-rounder and I preferred doing sport, I guess, or at least that was what was considered cooler to do. And that, you know, idiotically concerned me at the time, being cool. But I loved singing and I had various bands. And I would do acting as well. I did Hamlet and stuff at school. So I enjoyed speaking Shakespeare in my English lessons. I remember that was like, as soon as it came to reading through a play, my hand went up and I loved it. So that's what I did. And it was only until I got to university or college that I started auditioning for productions. And I did, in my first term, I did West Side Story, and then I did Jesus Christ Superstar and Return to the Forbidden Planet. And I loved the musicals. And then, but then I started taking myself too seriously again.
I do that often.
I do. I don't know what's wrong with me. I need to just let myself enjoy it. So I just started to do a bit more Shakespeare and improvisational comedy and sketch comedy. And I did that all the way through college. And then it was a case of what do I do next? Because I was actually studying languages. And I had friends auditioning for drama school, and it never occurred to me that this would be a career. But at the end of drama school, at the end of college, I had a bit of a rough experience, and I thought, well, I need to dedicate my life to something I'm going to enjoy.
Yep.
And I gave myself the option of singing or acting, and my sensible brain said there would be a longer career in acting. So I auditioned for drama school, and much like the My Fair Lady audition, I just thought I'd be open, and if I didn't get into one of the top two drama schools, then I clearly wasn't good enough to have a career in it, so I would find something else. But I got in, and then within a day of being there, I knew this was it. I'd found my tribe. It was the first time I'd been in a building where everybody was there for the same reason, not because they had to work, because of whatever, they had to get a degree, a diploma, but because they wanted to better themselves in this craft. And that immediately I became someone who wanted to study, which I'd never been before.
Right.
And that was it. Yeah. So but it wasn't really until I was at drama school that I had the affirmation that yes. And thankfully other people have decided to employ me along the way.
It helps.
Which is, yeah, you're kind of reliant on that. And not always. There have been big gaps, and I've produced a play myself when the gap was slightly too long for me to bear. But it's, you know, you're in your own movie as an actor. You mustn't compare yourself to anyone, and you've just got to keep your head down and do what feels right for you. And that's what I've tried to do.
So as an
actor now, which is great.
What did you say?
And I'm here now. So,
which is in singing and acting and doing
exactly.
It all. So what as an actor attracts you to, I mean, I'm sure all of it at some level, but what attracts you to a script in terms of when you first get something? Is it the story, character, you know, the dialogue? Is there something that you kind of just...
I think that is going to continually change as I go through my career. I think at the moment, like up until now, it's always about character. And making sure the character has a journey. I never want to be there just to serve up someone else's lines, really.
Right.
Or get the laughs. I need to, for me, there has to be a journey in the character, and it doesn't matter the size of the character, really, as long as there's something, because, if you have a journey, then you're creating something interesting, and people will notice it and hopefully empathize. And I think as I go on, if this leads to more work, touch wood, then other concerns will enter, like equal representation and
right.
things like this. But for now, it's always been about character, and I've been really lucky that I sort of have a history of doing characters who've fallen apart, which is great, and in period things as well, you know, which means that you're dealing with a period when people were very buttoned up and stiff upper lip and stuff, and then you see the cracks and you see them go through a change, and that's what we're doing with Henry Higgins, which is satisfying. Taking someone who's flawed, but completely sure of themselves and of what and their beliefs, and then pulling them apart and showing them realize that actually everything they believe is not necessarily true, and see how that affects them. That I'm being lucky in that I've had meaty roles in Downton and in The Crown, but prior to that, I've had parts to like Flarepath, and The Pride, which are great plays, but the characters are the ones that have had breakdowns, essentially. And it's hard work, but it's satisfying.
Who are some of your as I'm sure you will, to reference what you said earlier, continue working, touch wood, and I'll touch it for both of us because there's a wood table in front of me. Who are some of your favorite playwrights, and do you have a dream project that you would want to work on?
Oh wow. There are parts out there that, you know, I daren't really put too much focus on in case there's disappointment, but I always think the next role for me hasn't been written yet. I love doing modern work as well. New writing. And I've had the good fortune of working with new writers like Alexi K. Campbell and Laura Wade, and Dennis Kelly. And I think I love Martin McDonagh, who I got to meet last night, which I was very excited about.
Oh, that's cool. He came to the show. Wait, what day is today? Today is...
No, I don't know how, but I got into the Met Ball last night.
I was looking... Will's whispering to me, it's Tuesday, but I meant... Because Monday's dark in the theater, I was thinking...
This will air...
I saw pictures from the Met Ball. Wow.
Yeah, you may not have seen me, but I was there. It was... It was amazing, but my highlight was meeting Martin McDonagh and Gary Oldman, actually, who was as nice as I, you know, hoped he'd be. So there are people like those are the sort of the modern playwrights. But I'm up for working with everyone and staying open, see what comes along.
I love what you said about new work too, just because at the Geffen, that's something we're really focused on. Also, not to plug the Playhouse, but since it's the Geffen Playhouse Unscripted, I'll talk about it but just in terms of new works, you know, we have 9 shows that we're doing next year, 5 in the main stage, 4 in the, they're, you know, in the smaller space, and they're both, 7 of the 9 are world premieres. And
great.
And that's something that we've...
Congratulations.
Thank you. That's something that the theater's never done before. We have a new artistic director, Matt Shackman, who's a big believer in new work and kind of responding to what's going on in the world,
exactly.
Which I think
is cool. That's why I love the Royal Court in London. Because I did a play called Posh, which was set around the time when David Cameron was up for... was becoming prime minister, and so the debate was rife, and the atmosphere in the audience, literally the vote was going on whilst we were on stage.
Wow.
And that's what theatre is about, and that's why, to bring it back to My Fair Lady quickly, this musical is so relevant suddenly. The new writing is great, but revivals as well have a place because you compare them in context to when they were last received, and then you get an idea of how far you've come as a society, as a country. But with the new writing as well, absolutely having that dialogue with things that are going out and being able to change lines and stuff, change dialogue on a daily basis with reference to what's happening outside is as exciting as it gets, I think.
Is there any advice that you can offer to young actors or others in the arts that are looking to get their foot in the door?
Just work harder than anyone else. It's tricky because sometimes you need to come off that you are, you need to be confident and successful and act like you don't care. But I honestly believe if you work harder than anyone else, then people will respect them. And if you don't get that job, then you might get the next one. They'll remember it. Stay open. Keep the faith. It's a long journey, and the lows will make the highs better and make you a more interesting actor, I think. How's that?
That is amazing. I feel like that's kind
pretty,
of a...
It's pretty brutally honest.
It's brutally honest, and I think it's kind of a wonderful end to the conversation. I guess I'll ask you one last question, and that's, I'm not sure how long you're in My Fair Lady for, but is there anything that you want to talk about? Like, what's next on the horizon, or is that not the focus right now?
No, well, I'm very much in this. I have the Lenny Abrahamson film, The Little Stranger, will be coming out at some stage. Which was one of, I love his movie, The Room, so I was thrilled to be able to work with him. So that's coming out. But no, for now, I am in the theater for a while, I think till next year, all being well, and just serving it up.
That's awesome.
And enjoying the moment, yeah.
That's awesome. Harry Haddon Payton, thank you for your time on Geffen Playhouse Unscripted.
Thanks, Bill. Great to chat.
You as well. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to Geffen Playhouse Unscripted. Be sure to download new episodes every Wednesday at podcastone.com, on the Podcast One app, or subscribe at Apple Podcasts.
Welcome to the Dennis Miller Option. I mean, I remember Seagal came in some Alan Carr caftan or something, sat down with a Iroquois braid. I thought this could be a long week. Dana Carvey, ladies and gentlemen.
Why don't you yell out for Steve out there, see if you can get him to come in like you're the real deal.
Bulbous and engorged. Arnold is stronger than you. Your buttocks are like marshmallows compared to Arnold.
It was like the horse broke its leg in the back straight away, put the tent up and put me down. It was so awkward.
Remember to listen to new episodes of the Dennis Miller Option every Wednesday right here on Podcast One.
Do it.
You can follow Dennis on Twitter at DennisDMZ, Instagram at Dennis Miller, and on Facebook he's at Real Dennis Miller.
And by the way, I hide nothing here with the Dennis Miller podcast.
What kind of mind thinks of this?